Hello and welcome, Ducks fans, where and whenever you're watching or listening. This is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never before heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. We're approaching a game day down in UCLA against former head coach, one of my former head coaches, Chip Kelly. And just because of that, we needed a very, very special guest. But before we get to that, oh, Sam, we have a very, very special weekend to talk about. You and I made it down for the Friday game against Cal. And as everyone that follows us on Twitter knows, at JustFollow61, at Samuel101TS, we had a lot of fun starting out with a pretty gnarly hit I had on you right in front of Autzen Stadium. Probably the gnarliest hit outside of Autzen Stadium that has ever occurred. Wouldn't you agree?
I mean, I'm pretty sure there are some drunk fans at one time or another that would beg to differ. But that being said, I might have to return the favor if there's a trip made up to Seattle at any point. See if I can knock you on your ass on your own home turf.
Well, it wouldn't be hard to be the hardest hit outside or inside Husky Stadium right there, because everything around this area, very soft, very, very soft. But we'll get to that in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, I got to talk about all the people we have to thank from that episode, or from that game against Cal, and from everybody that shouted out to us at the game about our episode with Terrell Turner last week. It was a fantastic turnout, I would say.
I'm letting you sit in it.
I'll bask in it. I thought that one was absolutely worthy, especially because, you know, we had to go with the turn up title last week, and Autzen was turned up. I got my first and definitely last opportunity to be right there in the student section with you, and one of our VIPs, Corey, was able to come with me. We snuck down there together pretending we were youthful spirits and snuck right up to the front. We're able to find a little space with you guys for a bit, and that is one of the best views of Autzen Stadium, especially with that new screen. I'm glad you're able to enjoy it this senior year, Sam.
Well, you know, a lot of people question whether it is true that I've got some of the best views to the game. And I think that you can admit right there that it's not a lie when I say I've got a better view than most do as to what's going on week in and week out on the field right there.
Yeah. And I know how much time now you spend getting there that early, man. I was just wandering around for a while, finding things to do, meeting so many different people that I did and didn't recognize, and apologies to those I didn't, but everybody that was there, it was so awesome. And especially thanks to all our VIPs, you guys got to see a special video of that tackle. Everybody out there is able to see the gift, but we'll have to put that out there on our YouTube at some point. But if you want to be a VIP subscriber, you get the episodes early, you get inside info on all our episodes and just little fun videos like that. All you have to do is donate $5 or more to Cash App at Once a Duck or Venmo, Once a Duck there too. So just reach out to the DMs and we can let you know how to do that if you have any trouble. And that group of fans is awesome. And they were the ones that definitely are the loudest on game day and give us the most feedback.
Oh, for sure. And they're the people that help us make this possible, make this product possible, and also make fun days like Friday happen. I know that some of them were definitely responsible for everything coming into place the way it was. And so to all of them, I say thank you. It's always good to be able to get Nick down to a couple of games. And I think you're going to be back down again soon, and I look forward to it.
Yep. We'll talk about that a little more for our next episode for Colorado, but I will be down there, fingers crossed. But hey, before we jump into what we saw on the football field during the Cal game, let's get a lightning round in, because it's not very often that we get to have Saturdays off from just focusing on the Ducks, get to catch college football or whatever else you're doing in your life. So, Sam, go ahead, start us off. I'm going to put 2 minutes on the clock, starting on you.
Well, you know what, Nick, with a Friday game and a Saturday off, I had to actually go do like some normal human activities, which didn't include watching football, but instead I found myself at a pumpkin patch for the majority of Saturday.
Ooh, wow. Well, after I was still riding home in the morning and, got back to Seattle just in time to settle down, catch a little bit of college football. It wasn't anything too noticeable. Kept flipping through, you know, the typical disappointments, kind of anybody in the top three right now. You got to be pretty nervous. So I got to see some exciting upsets and was happy about that, because normally for me, it's whatever whoever Oregon's playing, and maybe I'll catch a couple Pac-12 games. But I got to just see a bunch of upsets, bunch of college games that I probably wouldn't have seen otherwise if we didn't play on a Friday.
That Purdue-Iowa game is definitely one that surprised me. I was away from TVs, and so being able to come back and see that, that was absolutely wild. I was also able to enjoy some food from my home city. It's great to be up in Portland, especially North Portland, where I love to be able to visit and go back to and be able to visit Poshine's up there on up there and for just off interstate. It's always a great place to go get some soul food in Portland, so I was happy to be over there.
Awesome. Well, once I was done scouring through some of the college games, I was very, very focused on the Seattle Kraken playing what was their third game of the season, coming off a win in Nashville. My hopes were very, very high that we could get our first winning streak going. But as most Seattle teams do, especially at the professional level, they broke my heart. They went into overtime, even though they had a lead for most of the second period onward, and went into overtime and lost in overtime, which you still get points in the NHL ranking system. But from all there, it's been losses. Very, very hard for me, Sam. As a Kraken fan, I'm starting to realize why I don't root for the Mariners.
Well, Nick is somebody who does screw off. And I will say it was great to be able to watch a little bit of college football. I was able to watch the UCLA-Washington game, the Washington State-Stanford game before heading out on the town, seeing the great Big J Okerson at Portland Helium. He had a great show, and it was a lot of fun to be able to hang out, go see some comedy, get some yucks in.
Ooh, wow. Well, we went into overtime a little bit there. And
we still get a point in the NHL.
Well, exactly. Exactly. That and, you know, I think we can have a little bit of a delay in our podcast. It won't be anything like the delay we saw with Tennessee and Ole Miss there. That was that's a delay if you want to see one. So, you know, if we ever play Tennessee again down the road, I'd love to revisit that. And as we've talked about in previous episodes, you don't dance to Rocky Top in that stadium there, man. That's it's a dangerous place to be. You got to be on your toes. Always keep your helmet on. And if Lane Kiffin ever goes back, I hope he gets a hard hat.
Well, you know, I'll give him credit. That was a great grab. That was a one-handed grab of what looked like a pee bottle. We can't say it was anything other than that. It looked like a pee bottle to me, man. And that was a good catch on his part to be able to pull that in before he was able to hit anybody.
Pee bottle or a spittoon, potentially. Yeah, somebody might be having some dip spit in there. But, hey, that's all up to, you know, your own individual perspective. But
it's Schrodinger's bottle. It either is or isn't.
I love it, man. And otherwise, you know, I would have been going to bed probably at the time after an Oregon game or watching Pac-12 after dark, you know, if we were playing in a game like that. So probably would have missed that otherwise. And what a mess. But, hey, SEC's problem, it just means more there. Oh man, but moving on, we have College Game Day, which also just means a little bit more, and I was very lucky to get to play in a few of them under Coach Chip Kelly, and I'm very interested to see what it's going to be like. I've heard he's even going to make an appearance on game day, which some people are surprised by, but even there were times where you know, he doesn't have to be there through your normal morning routines when you're at the hotel. So there were times he wasn't there and was going and doing little either recruiting things or press things. So don't be surprised by that. But what I am surprised by is that technically that they picked this game. They must have marked this on the calendar way before the loss at Stanford.
Well, you know, I was looking at the schedule for next week, and truthfully, I don't mean to say this in a way that's going to demean Oregon, but there aren't a ton of great games next week. I don't believe there's a single ranked team playing another ranked team. I could be wrong, but there aren't very many marquee matchups. And a game between two Pac-12 schools, each one with a win, will control their own destiny. Each one with a win will get a primary television spot next week. That's about as good as anything gets. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, you're already in Los Angeles. It's probably not a long trip for a lot of the production team out there to be able to get people there. They've got two storied programs, some programs that have been on game day a couple of times before. And, you know, ESPN loves to be able to get the Disney design duck on there every now and then.
They really do. And, you know, it's, you know, the other thing is that we've had, you know, UCLA Oregon game day before. And, you know, it's even been the inaugural Pac-12 championship game. But this matchup is different just because of the expectations of both these teams at different points this season and where they are currently and how much is really riding on this game for both teams. Coming out of that Cal game, you know, it was our predictions were very, very, very close. But a lot of people were disappointed with the lack of scoring. And, you know, our defense did play a lights out game for the most part, but it was very, very tough to have to come back and score 14 points in the fourth quarter to win. Gutsy win. And it's going to tell us a lot how much of that they can take on the road and build on, instead of having these, you know, digging yourself into a hole and having to come back moments. Because I think doing that in a college game day scenario is, you know, that's a really challenging scenario, and you're not setting yourself up for success if you get down early and the crowd's just going to get louder, crazier. They're going to be up early, even though it's an early game. They're going to be up even earlier for game day. And it's probably the most psyched a UCLA crowd has been in a long, long time.
Well, I would imagine so. And they have a lot of reason to be psyched. They've got an exciting program and an exciting product on the field for the first time in I don't know how long. Even go back to that initial Pac-12 championship team. I'm not going to say that was the most exciting UCLA team of all time. Franklin was a good running back. He was a lot of fun to watch. But besides that, what did they really have going on? Now you've got Chip Kelly, his inventive system, probably one of, if not the best tight end in the Pac-12, as well as Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who, despite some inconsistencies early in his career, has really proven to be an absolute go-getter at quarterback. He's an aggressive guy. He'll go make a play happen. Correct me if I'm wrong, but exactly the type of player Chip Kelly wants back there behind the center.
Yeah, I mean, that's hard to say because I don't know. I've always felt like Chip has adapted to so many different guys. I think we've always said something along the lines of, you know, that's the perfect Chip Kelly guy. But you really look at Oregon's quarterbacks and how different they were even under Chip Kelly. You know, Mariota and DT were very different. And, you know, you compare that to Mazzoli, you compare that to having to really try and lead Roper and Costa, and different guys at different points through his tenure there when there were injuries or, you know, different things came up. And it was really, really tough. I mean, all those guys had such a different skill set. But I think that the real attributes that Chip, not just at quarterback, but demands at every position, is that you are locked in and that your mental focus is there, because that will create such a different, you know, level of speed. It's so much easier to react to something mentally and create a speed advantage in that sense than there is to do anything different physically. You're not going to change your physical composition overnight, but you can begin to train to react faster to things and train yourself to be able to know exactly what to do in a moment, so that you don't just, you know, if a defensive end slides in, you immediately know where the ball is. The left tackle knows immediately what kind of path he has to get to blocking the true backside defender. You all have to have all this built in, and Chip was really key at finding those guys that just got that.
And, you know, another thing about this Chip Kelly team that I think is worth pointing out, and it's been a thing, I think, throughout a lot of Chip Kelly teams, is the offense gets a whole lot of attention, but the defense is really stout. They're a team that really, really tries, and they work, and they're very good at getting to the boundary, forcing you out. And I think that's going to be a potential problem for this Oregon team, is how are they going to deal with that swarming, quick-moving defense that might not have the overall talent that Oregon does on their defense, but is really trying out there and putting their heart into every single play, every single game.
Yeah, and not just that. I think they have a lot more experience than Oregon going into this game. I mean, Oregon's a very, very young team, and I think that's another advantage, particularly on the defensive side of the football, when you've seen all the different things an offense could try and throw at you. You know, especially because our offense really hasn't done anything outside of what we've seen. Nothing unexpected, no major explosion plays or trick plays. I mean, it's been, for the most part, what we've run the first couple of weeks has just been what we've continued to run. So that kind of an experience and stout defense could pose problems. But I think the bigger thing, how Oregon's defense is going to play against Chip Kelly's offense. And hopefully, you know, we get some guys back. We are able to get out there and get a full four quarters from Kayvon Thibodeaux, because as we saw, when that guy is unleashed in the second half, every single play, he has the potential to change the game.
Well, he makes such a huge difference. Just look at time of possession for Cal in the first half versus the second half. Completely different. He played in all of 22 second half snaps. 11 of those he created pressure. That is an unreal statistic. Half of the plays you are on the field, you are creating pressure. It's unreal. He had some really, really impressive plays that I know you saw, probably shook in your shoes as an offensive lineman, just seeing the way he bowled through some of those guys. It was unreal. The amount of pressure he's able to create and how he basically shuts down an entire side of the field is just so gosh darn impressive. But you know, there was some impressive stuff across the game, I thought, for Oregon. It wasn't the game maybe some people wanted, but I thought there were definitely some guys who had some impressive moments. One of them that I'd be remiss not to point out is Camden Lewis hit a deep field goal. That thing was longer than I think I've seen a field goal hit in Autzen in my time being there. I don't remember somebody hitting one from that deep, and it really just sent this feeling of confidence through me and through a lot of other people around me that, oh, okay, I mean, this isn't just a guy who's been better and improved. This is a guy who's really developed into the kicker he was recruited to be, and he's really showing what he's capable of, and that even if Oregon's a little further back than you would want, they can still get points out of some of those drives.
Yeah, that was really, really important. And the only negative that really came through again and again in this game was that ever since the Bennett Williams injury, our turnover margin has hurt significantly because we haven't gotten any turnovers. Ever since Bennett Williams has left the lineup in these past two games, we've not been able to force a turnover. So if that doesn't happen, that's going to put this team, the way it's currently structured, into a difficult position where they have to be efficient with the football on offense.
Well, they'll absolutely have to be. As you mentioned, since the Bennett Williams injury, the Friday before the Stanford game, no turnovers in that Stanford game, which we understood a little bit might be part of what happened. Stanford as a team really hadn't turned the ball over that much in the season. But going into this Cal game, this is when you wanted to be able to see those guys step up and create some definite mistakes. And look, Chase Garbers is an experienced quarterback. He's been around the block several times. He knows how to play. And Oregon did a really good job sending blitzers, sending pressure, especially on that last series. But, you know, you would love to be able to see them take advantage of some of the mistakes, be able to really put their best foot forward defensively. Oregon's defense, I think we've both seen a lot of pretty soft zone throughout the majority of these games so far. And if you're going to be doing that and keep everything in front of you, that's fine. But you got to take advantage every time there's a ball in the air, a ball on the ground, or a mistake being made.
Yeah. And you know what? It's still at the end of the day, even though fans were pretty frustrated with certain moments in the game, I think it's important to see that this team made it through a gut check moment at home, and hopefully they can build off some of the successes they were able to. And with getting more guys back and getting more people just, you know, at full health, I think that's only going to help get this team and the season to progress in a more positive direction. But it's all going to matter whatever they do against UCLA this week. And first off, caps off to Coach Wilcox, and the Cal Bears definitely came out prepared, knew that they had to hold on to the ball as much as they could in the first half. And Kayvon Thibodeau came out and absolutely made it near impossible for him. And got to say, Travis Dye also out there having a major, major impact on the game because, you know, all the weight of the world of this offense is resting on his shoulders right now. I think it was, what, 26 carries?
But I'll tell you what, over 200 yards rushing alone. That, if that doesn't tell you what kind of production he had, I don't know what will.
Yeah, that's nuts. And the team absolutely needed every bit of it. So, you know, again, caps off to him. And as I say that, we move on to a little bit of, before we get our guest, I want to talk about a little bit of gear I was able to dig up. I know you love gear, but I'm not a big fan of these hats. Number one, I know you can't see it very well with how bright my camera is, but this is the inaugural Pac-12 championship hat. Still got the sticker on it and everything. Also over here, was able to dig up some very interesting programs from the inaugural Pac-12 championship game that still in the original casing. Can't really find that everywhere, but have these back in the storage. And one that's a special Sports Illustrated edition that whenever had their little bit of Mark Asper, Joe Harrington action on the front. Thought that was pretty cool. I've got one more here I'll bring up for our special guest, but the real special thing, and I've talked about it a couple times on this podcast, I found the very special cleat I had to wear in the inaugural Pac-12 championship game, and I had to wear it in the Rose Bowl. And thank you again, Ty Burrell. Without you, this would not be possible. And thanks to him saying break a leg in the Oregon State game right before the Pac-12 championship game, I rolled my ankle so bad that I had to have the trainers infuse a brace into the bottom of this cleat here. And yeah, you can't pull that out. And hit it nice and hard with even a helmet. Could take a helmet shot right there. But I was not moving my ankle either way that was going to offend the ankle sprain or make it get inflamed at all. So had to wear that for the very short week going into what was a Friday game coming off a Saturday. One less day of recovery, which was a lot of fun. But special, special moment. And got to wear it in the Rose Bowl too. So ever since then, I was like, I'll probably never wear those pair of cleats again. You know, Chief, leave it in there. Be a nice souvenir someday. And obviously a great topic to talk about on the podcast because we're going to talk to one of the greatest ankle breakers in Oregon history. Yeah, we finally got him, Sam. I know how excited you've been. And we've been teasing it out there on Twitter for a while that we're talking to LaMichael James, but finally got him, folks. Sam, give us an intro.
Well, you know what, folks? I don't really know what more to say besides this guy was a Pac-12 Offensive Freshman of the Year. He's got a Doak Walker Award. He's been a Heisman Trophy finalist. He was a second-round pick in the NFL draft. This is a guy who's won Rose Bowls, won the inaugural Pac-12 championship team, dragged this team to a national championship back in 2010, leading the way there, was able to pick up slack as a freshman when no one thought he was really going to be able to. This is a guy who's just done anything, everything. And now he owns a pretty good food spot too. I know I've been there recently and I'm going to have to go back again after this interview, but Nick, say the name again. Let's get over to it.
LaMichael James finally on Once a Duck. Let's go. Okay, so we knew with a big game day matchup down in UCLA against former Oregon coach Chip Kelly that we had to have a big, big guest, and we've had a lot of them this season, but we are honored to have former running back and my teammate, LaMichael James. LaMichael, thank you for coming on with us, man.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. Thanks for reaching out to me and having me on.
Yeah, dude, and we've been looking to have you on for a long time because whenever we put out there to our fans, like, who would you guys want to see that I played with? Two names always come up, LaMichael James, Marcus Mariota. So that's pretty good company, you and a Heisman Trophy winner. But before we talk about your career, I want to talk about last season, 2020, with the pandemic, everything going on with all the Zoom meetings. You were able to get on Zoom with all the running backs, and the feedback from them was just, this guy taught us not just football, but life lessons. Just could you share a little bit with our audience just what you told them and what advice you have from your own in football experience and career?
Oh, man, when I first got on a call with them, you know, some of those guys, they look up to you. They follow in your footsteps. And just some of the things that I took away just with playing for Chip, I always have this story. No matter who you are or how good you are, he always treated everybody the same. And you had to be accountable. You had to be reliable. Can I depend on you not only on the football field, but can I depend on you in the classroom? And he always told us, I don't know if you remember, but you can't have them all. You can't make good grades. You can't be a good football player. You can't skip class and party. You got to pick two of those things and be that. And I took that with me, you know, for forever. You know, I wasn't into the parties. I wasn't into doing much besides football and school. You know, that's what my main goals were and that's what my focus was. So, I just told them, you know, you got to be kind of a dog mentality, you know, but you have to take care of everything else, you know. As far as schoolwork, life, it's a balance there. And you're going to be faced with adversity and however you come out of that. On top, or if you fold, then, you know, that depends on you.
LaMichael, we're going to take it back a little bit to when you were getting recruited when you were in high school. First, I'm kind of curious, to a guy who is as talented as you are, who was looked at the way you were, how was the Oregon program pitched to you? And then what was the selling point that really brought you to Eugene?
Just the culture and everything, you know, the stability of the coaching staff. They all been there, you know, 20, 30 years. And I knew that wasn't going to go anywhere and how hard the teamwork. I wasn't one of those guys that want to go to a big time program with tons of 5-star guys that are prima donnas. I want to go where guys were working and try to build something from the foundation and build it up. The biggest thing, you know, I look at now, you know, you see a lot of programs with a ton of more talent than Oregon, but they ain't working as hard. You know, I just can't really get down with it. I feel like you got to get in the trenches and work hard and earn your keep, you know, just because you're a big time guy don't mean you can go in there and go out there and compete and expect the people to lay down for you. So that was probably one of the biggest selling points, you know, with going to University of Oregon.
Yeah. It was a huge selling point for me, as we've talked about on this podcast many times, even as a four-star guy with a lot of, you know, offers and even teams telling me, you know, hey, we'll play you right away. Those situations weren't what I wanted. I wanted to come in and compete. And we certainly did. We had to redshirt together, and we've talked about it before. I think best scout team in Oregon history, I might say, but I still remember the first moment you put a spin move on Pat Chung that just made everybody gasp. And I was like, that guy is going to be something for us. What do you remember from the best scout team in Oregon history in that year we had? We talked about it with John Boyette because we had to talk about him playing some QB for us too.
Oh, hey, you know what? That's probably – my redshirt year is probably one of the funnest years, you know, I've had at the University of Oregon, going against legends, you know, Pat Chung, Walter, man, T.J. Ward, yeah. Bacon. You know, there's so many of those guys. Jarius Bird. Yep. I mean, who they didn't have, you know, it was just crazy, you know, going against guys of that caliber, you know, each and every day. And actually, you know, having some success, you know, and I just remember Coach Aliotta, you'd be like, oh, how did he get over here? Like, what happened? Run it again. And then they all tackled me, you know, so they really got me ready to step in the limelight pretty quick, being on that scout team.
Yeah. It was our job to make sure Coach Al was keeping his voice lost throughout most of the season.
most definitely.
Well, Michael, by the time that season came to an end, the next season began, you were in a spot to definitely play, but due to some circumstances, you ended up playing probably a whole lot more than anybody would have expected. From that freshman year, from really getting out on the field and being able to show people what you had, did you feel as if you always knew that you were going to go out there and perform the way you did? Or was it kind of a thing of you got out there and even you a little bit were like, oh, okay, I've got some real room out here. I can really do my thing.
My mentality was, again, like just coming from practicing and going against all those guys I already named each and every day, I knew that, you know, if I could go against them and get yards, I can go against anybody, no matter the size, but I knew I had heart. That's one thing I can honestly say, like, I wasn't scared. I wasn't going to back down. I was going to take the fight to you, you know, each and every day. But just learning the game and learning the plays and just playing with confidence and going out there and competing. I mean, it's a whole different ball game when you're going from high school to college. You know, there's more games. The hits are a little different. And just having to, you know, withstand the grind of a long season, that's probably one of the things that I had to learn later, you know, later in life.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a real grind that freshman year when we had to go down to UCLA with a backup quarterback and me starting in my first game as a backup lineman. And I don't know how much you recall before your big run, but we're there on the 1 yard line, 0-0. We come out first or second down, we run play action. The defensive tackle basically stands up with me on his back. Very next play, I go and try and block him. Asper washes me down. I get thrown aside. You have one of the craziest runs in Oregon history. A spin move that should have gone into a pile, and you magically reappear on the other side of the play and start running down the field for what would have been a touchdown if the DB wasn't being shook and looking over both shoulders. What do you remember from that day, and how do you make a play like that with that spin move? Is it instinct? Is it something you saw? Or is it just, hey, that's what I had to do. That's what I did.
Hey, that's funny. That play hunts me because I definitely should have scored. But at that time, I didn't trust my speed yet. You know, I knew I was fast, but I didn't really know how fast I really was. I definitely could have beat him to the end zone. And actually making the cuts, I was just making cuts, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a young player. You know, I'm a redshirt freshman in a hostile environment in the Rose Bowl. You know, I think, you know, that probably played a little factor in it. And just before the play happened, I just knew that I couldn't get a safety in being a, you know, 180-pound running back in the end zone, and I'm running a freaking dive play. You know, you don't really see that typically with a guy of my size and coming from a zone scheme. Everything we do is in shotgun, and now it's not. So I just was looking, you know, at the guard, and I'm like, oh, he got to beat. Let me get inside. And I know you can't cut off your inside foot. So the only thing I could do was spin and hope for the best. And then one spin led to two spins, and I was in the clear.
What a play.
Well, Michael, I got to ask you about at least one more game from that first season. And it was that Fright Night Halloween game against USC. It's late October now. We're getting into the kind of the Halloween season. And this is a game that just as a kid, I remember skipping trick or treating just so I could be able to watch this. It was like a national spotlight game for y'all and something that really kind of showed the world who Oregon football was and who they were becoming. Can you kind of walk us through kind of that domination of USC and kind of what it felt like to really assert Oregon as the top program in the conference?
First, I have to say, practice hard the entire week. We was definitely ready. But when you play a team like USC, you know, there's always going to be that mindset, this is USC. You remember the heydays of, you know, the Reggie Bush, Lindell White, all those great linebackers they had. And, you know, they had a lot of great players. They're still there. And when you play them, you know, it just has that it factor. And we were coming into form, and I just was definitely ready for the challenge. And we really brought the fight to them. And it was a hard-fought game, but, you know, we came out on top.
Yeah, Fright Night. That's one of those that all Oregon fans that were there or even watching, you remember where you were and just how awesome it felt to just not just be winning, but mostly dominating them most of the game.
Well, craziest game I've probably ever been a part of as far as like the how loud it was and how intense it was. It was one for the ages.
Well, you took that dominance from that game and turned it into entire season the next year with, you know, a pretty solid Heisman campaign and a Doak Walker year. And was able to dig this up, a program from the national championship game, looking like a beast there. What was it like to really go from a guy that started out as a freshman thinking coming in the season, I'm going to be a backup, gets thrown into a primary position, and then next year is such a feature role with such a really talented team with so many weapons?
You know, just going into that year, I remember, you know, playing as a freshman and just getting hit so much. And like I said, I was only 180 pounds and, you know, I was taking on all challenges. You was there with me. Anything that came in front of me, I was going to take it on. I wasn't going to shy away from it and just learning how to play a little smarter, because toward the end of that season, you know, your body started to wear down, you're beat up. I think I was overly aggressive, and just looking back at that and learning from that, and then you're going into next year and most of everybody you played with is coming back, and now you got like a bullseye on you. You just got to go out there and compete. And hey, we fought hard. I would never say, hey, we had the most talent out there, but one thing I can always say, that there was no one above each other. Everybody was a team, one band, one sound.
Well, Michael, this coming week, Oregon plays UCLA. Your final home game at Autzen Stadium was the inaugural Pac-12 championship game against the very same UCLA Bruins. Walk us through that game a little bit. It can't feel like a normal week going into a Pac-12 championship game, especially one being held at home. What was the week of practice like? And then what was it like to hit the field for the final time in front of that crowd?
Oh, at that time, I think we had already played, if I'm not mistaken. And I want to say we hung 60 on them or somewhere. I think, did we play them twice that year, Nick?
I don't think so, but Sam, I'll look at the stats on that.
I can't remember. I'm getting older. But yeah, I remember playing them and just thinking like, man, this could be my last home game just because there's an NFL draft. I didn't know if I was going to stay or go. I knew like mentally I was leaning toward more like leaving, but, you know, just going out there and running through that tunnel for the last time and being able to bring the Pac-12 championship, you know, back to Eugene and for your brothers and making it three in a row, that was incredible. You know, that's the only thing I thought about, you know, the entire week. This could be my last week practicing in Eugene. And it was a bittersweet moment for me.
Yeah. Well, and it was a shortened week. I remember because I was coming off injury and we had to play on a Friday. I was like, oh man, one less day to recover, especially in chip system. Those days it was like every day you had to win. So losing one day was always like, ah, man. One of those things that our team definitely learned and helped us win that game and the Rose Bowl was just making the most out of every single day. Have you taken that and applied it to your life outside of football now?
Oh, I apply everything Chip taught me every single day. Hands down, one of the best coaches, you know, I've had, not just football, but in life, you know, just attack each and every day. Don't worry about tomorrow, worry about today. I approach that every single day. I'm just trying to win the day. Someone can ask me, what are you doing Saturday? Hey, man, I'm just focused on today. I can control what I can control, and that's in my power, and anything else, and it's irrelevant to me.
Michael, last couple of weeks or last couple of times this question's been asked, it's been Nick jumping on a question that I love, so I'm going to have to sneak in and ask it. I'm somebody that grew up with your guys' era of Oregon football. Part of that is being really into the style of football, not just on the field, but literally what you guys were wearing. I guess I have to ask, through all those combinations you guys had through all those years, which one sticks out to you as that this felt the flyest?
Flyest. Man, the all-white uniform is a pretty swipe. Pretty fly. So I'm about to say all white. The ones we wore at Tennessee, those were pretty fly. I like that. And Cal 2011, the one where I dislocated my elbow. Those are probably my favorite uniforms by far. That one.
Well, let's dig into that Cal game. From what I remember, I was like, oh man, is everybody quiet? Because I'm down on the field thinking, oh, I might have hurt my knee. No, kind of shake it off. And then I see the replay. Colt Lyerla, me, completely whiff on whatever we were communicating on a double team. Guy comes through. What's a moment like that for you in Autzen Stadium? And how do you bounce back to that and recover and get back on the playing field?
You just got to have grit. You know, when it initially happened, it was like they blew it dead. The fumble came after. And then, you know, just trying to brace yourself on the fall, just a freak accident. And you hear it snap and you instantly know, oh, this is where, you know, it's not like a broken arm, but it don't look right. You know, I just remember seeing tattoos, the top tattoos on the bottom. And I'm like, this ain't right. And then, you know, you're pulling it and it goes back into place. It instantly swells. They're like, hey, let's put it back in place. I'm like, it's already there. Don't touch me. They're like, let's get the cart. I'm like, I don't need a cart. I can walk off. And then just going through your head, like you thinking, wow, I've let all my brothers down. You know, like I've got hurt. Here goes, you know, I'm not going to say here goes the season, but, you know, I've let guys down. That's what was going through my head. I don't want to miss any games. I want to be out there practicing. I want to be out there playing. And you just don't want to go out that way. So I just knew, you know, once it happened, I don't care if I had to play in the cast, I was going to get back out there and be with my brothers.
One thing I got to ask you, and probably on a slightly cheerier note than that, is got to be, when was the last time you were able to get back in Autzen Stadium? And do you think coming up for a coming game this season or next season, you'll be able to walk back through through that tunnel?
Oh, I go actually a lot. I haven't been to one this year and last year, but I used to go all the time. And usually I just go and sit in Pat Kilkenny's suite just because they got food. You know, it's chill. Really have a good time up there. So the next one, I really want to go to UCLA and watch Oregon play them. But unfortunately, my birthday is on Friday, so I stay put. But I got to make my way up to Eugene.
Oh, man. Well, an early happy birthday to you. Actually, when we release this episode, it will be on your birthday. So happy birthday today as this episode releases. But thanks again for coming on with us. I'll just we'll each ask you one more question. I just got to ask you, with what you're doing with Killer Burger, I go and check it out every time. I love it. What drew you to that franchise and how can people find you?
I just remember I was in Sherwood. I really love being like in the suburbs of Oregon, just in random spots. And I was like, I'm going to try this burger spot. And I went in there. I love burgers. It was amazing. And at the time, I'm like, I wonder if I could own one of these. I kind of like the vibe. And I have no restaurant experience. I have no ownership experience. It's an Oregon brand. People in Oregon love Oregon brands. So if I was ever to do anything in Oregon, it would have to be an Oregon brand. I looked it up, did my due diligence on it. And it went from like, if I'm going to do it to when I'm going to do it. And it just happened so fast. Found the location and then it just took off, you know, and I love it. Love being a part of the Oregon community, love doing things there. And now I'm on store number two.
Last thing, LaMichael, for somebody who might be a student, for somebody who might be an athlete, who's looking to make that transition from that one stage of life into that second chapter, into a more entrepreneurial mindset or into like a business path, what advice would you give them about how to be able to approach that next chapter?
The biggest thing is probably going to be perseverance. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be challenges. There's going to be a lot of no's. I always look at things like everything is figured out. You know, there's going to be a lot of closed doors, but you just got to keep fighting and keep persevering and don't give up. You know, that's probably the biggest thing for me. I'm like, there's been days, there's been times I'm like, I just can't do this. But in the back of my head, you know, I just can't quit. And failure, I look at it totally different. There's tons of things, you know, I failed that, didn't do well at, but if you quit, that's like the ultimate failure. You know, that's not real life. Life, and run that back. I look at things like, you know, just in life, there's going to be failures and there's going to be hard times, but you just got to persevere and just keep striving, you know, for excellence and never quitting. So that's probably the biggest thing for me, especially owning a restaurant. There's, you know, there's been times I'm like, I just can't do this. I don't want to get out of bed. It's hard, but you can't be that way. You know, you just got to go out there and get it done. There's always tomorrow. The world waits for no one. There's going to be, you know, 24-hour sympathy for, you know, everything. But at the end of the day, the clock don't stop. The bills still got to be paid. And there's going to be more problems and there's going to be more good things happen in life. You just got to keep going.
Well, we appreciate you for coming on. And I know personally as a teammate, we always knew you'd never quit and you never let us down, Mullah Mike. And appreciate being your teammate and even more being able to talk to you and talk about your time in Oregon. Thanks for coming on with us.
Hey, man, I appreciate you guys for having me on.
Yep. Once a duck, always a duck.
Always.
Wow. Of course, we knew he would be a fantastic interview, but what, you know, what a bunch of life lessons you can take away from this podcast on time. My favorite chipism was always pressure is what you feel when you don't know what you're doing. And I don't feel pressure because I know what I'm doing. And LaMichael definitely knows what he's doing with Killer Burger, man. I love that place. Like you said, I got to get back down there as soon as I can.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, peanut butter pickle burger, it doesn't sound like it would be that good, but my goodness, you put one in front of me and it is crushed instantly. I will throw that thing down with the best of them. They are phenomenal. And also, it's rare that you get a burger, and I know we're going off track a little bit here. It's rare when you get a burger place where the burger and the fries are both top tier, and I'll give it to Killer Burger, they're both top tier.
And where you can get a brew, you know, as my other podcast, I got to be cracking one open if I'm going to be heading to your facility. So being able to have a brew at your establishment is perfect for me. But moving on, back to UCLA and Coach Chip Kelly. Man, we've had some great matchups and some tough ones. As we talked about, going down there in 2009 was a rough day for me, man. I know that there's some video footage out there of when I got a nice shot to the knee, which had a slight minor tear in my MCL that I think it was either both Duran or Jordan Holmes' helmet came into a pile when I was standing there and just hit me right through the brace, and never wore the soft braces ever since then. Always went hard Don Joyce, but there's a video of me on the sidelines that I got a call from my mother about after the game, where I'm getting taped up and getting just tape over the knee. And I'm just yelling at Chief, like I'm just mad at him for it, but I was just in excruciating pain. And somewhere out there that video exists. But other part of my, you know, that was a very, very difficult game, a very hard day for me. I didn't play great, but I still love that it's still on, you know, the college ESPN intro a lot of times, that Jeff Mail touchdown in that end zone when he's jumping up there. I still love seeing that clip every time because it reminds me of my first start and how that team overcame so much that first year.
Well, and that game was one where every faction of the team contributed a little bit. You had Kenyon Barner with special teams running back that kickoff for a touchdown. Talmadge Jackson had the pick six for a touchdown. That's a really rounded effort. And it was a tough game. It was a season with a lot of tough games. And that was a really gutsy pull it out kind of victory, a kind of victory that I think Oregon will probably have to, a type of game, I should say, Oregon would probably have to play this weekend in order to get a victory.
Yeah. But actually, and you know, as LaMichael alluded to, we did play them in 2010. We didn't play them before the Pac-12 championship that season, but we did play them at home in 2010. And as Terrell Turner loved, the black and yellows were worn that night. I still remember one of my favorite parts of that night was somebody was talking a lot of crap to Darian Weems, and I was working with him in tandem at guard, and we had just one moment where they tried to kind of hit us with a little bit of pressure and a twist, and we completely sealed it off. I completely jammed the runaround guy into him, and You know, I probably talked a little bit of trash, but Weems said some things I cannot repeat on this podcast. And once we get him back on, I'll have to remind him and ask him if he remembers what those words were. But oh my goodness, I was sitting there. I had to wait to get to the sidelines, and we laughed about that so bad because he went full, like, I mean, he went a full kung fu chop on this guy with his pass protection and just blasted him into the same guy I was trying to push right that way. So just one of those perfect moments. And UCLA was always one of those teams that talked a lot of trash, even in moments that they had no right to, which that game they definitely didn't.
You know, that's one of those games I remember where I was listening to the radio hearing the Jerry Allen call. But one thing that sticks with me about that 2010 matchup, old coach Neuheisel, known for saying a lot, he said very little in the post game. And if I'm correct, that phrase was, that was impressive. I'll leave it at that.
Well, yeah. Well, what's funny is the year prior, I wish he had said less, because after we beat them in the Rose Bowl, my first memory of Neuheisel being one for words, he got on the microphone in front of all the student section that was still there at the end of the game and basically apologized for the team's performance and was like, please come back out next week, guys. We promise we're going to have a great product for you. And yeah, it was rough. And I remember thinking that next year after we beat him bad, it was like, yeah, probably didn't need to beat you so bad, but seeing that was pathetic. But they did come out early in that inaugural Pac-12 championship game. And even though we were heavy favorites and obviously at home, which, you know, now the structure of the Pac-12 doesn't allow, Vegas will be very, very cool, hopefully for the Pac-12 venue. But man, sure was cool having the home stadium host that. And obviously we had a big advantage, not just because of being at home, but I believe USC was ineligible to play in that game. And UCLA was able to be bumped in what was a weird year for the Pac-12 South. But all in all, it was a really, really coldest game I think I remember playing in Autzen, that's for sure. But you get up there at the end, you get the hat, even as ugly as it is, I was rocking it the entire night. Probably never rocked it again, because even wearing it now, it is so damn uncomfortable. It's just not, it doesn't even fit right in the front. You know, even though it's a snapback, it's still hurting my head. But hey, that's about the only complaint I have from that night, buddy.
Well, you know, Oregon did play UCLA. They missed UCLA in the regular season 2011. Got them in the Pac-12 championship game. Missed again in 2012 because of the new alignment rules. But that 2013 game, that was a game day game. It was a really exciting, I would say a really exciting ball game, but my goodness, Oregon came out and absolutely dominated that one.
Exciting 24, for us.
2014, I know everybody remembers that as the Mariota whiteout, fumbling it to himself. You got to be pretty impressive to fumble to yourself and still rush for a touchdown. I know he did on that play. Racking my brain for any more of the famous matchups between these two teams. Obviously, there's plenty from back in the day. The first ever game day game Oregon was associated with. Mm-hmm. It was a UCLA matchup. Yeah. Oregon got on the cover of Sports Illustrated after beating them again. I believe it was that 2002 or 2003 game. And then, you know, the Ohana jerseys last year. Wish we could have seen those in person. Especially with the Verone McKinley scoop and score. But, you know, these two teams always play fun matchups.
And not to forget, Turn the Chip Around, which gave us our very fantastic Neil Everett interview, which you should go back and check out, because nothing says Hollywood like Neil Everett, baby.
Until we eventually get Ty Burrell on to answer for his mistakes and answer for his qualms, then I think we're going to have to that'll be as Hollywood as it gets.
You need to answer for this, Ty. I need answers. Man, I would have celebrated a whole lot more after that Pac-12 title, but I got mine, that's for sure. But I also remember the first time Chip came back to Autzen, and that was, you know, really interesting. We all speculated, you know, will the fans, you know, boo him? Will they, you know, will they embrace him? And, you know, the visor off moment. It was all very, very interesting how that played out. But I feel like the next time UCLA comes back around, if that coaching staff is in place, don't think the fans are at a point where they're going to be too friendly to UCLA if they're not even that friendly to our own team at times.
Yeah, you know, the boo birds came out a little bit on a Friday night. That can happen, especially for a late game, especially with the rowdy student section. It can definitely occur.
But, I blame you guys. I blame you guys. It's not like I went over
Careful with that. Careful with that royal you guys right there.
It's not like I went over and instigated anything at all.
Not whatsoever, Nick.
Oh, man. What? Hey, I had a great time. The booing doesn't, that's the whole thing. People got mad on Twitter. Booing doesn't ruin anybody's fan experience. And as a player, you're tuning it out. Or if you hear anything, you might use it as a little bit of motivation, like Walk said. So I don't have a problem with it. And there's not going to be any booing that matters in the Rose Bowl. I know that for sure. The way that stadium is designed and the way UCLA students are, even when it is pretty loud, on the field, you're in your own zone. It's just this own place where Oregon honestly done pretty well lately. I know last time that we went to a bowl game together, that was, it just felt like our team still had this home field advantage, even though we were outnumbered and at times outnumbered on the scoreboard and feeling like it was, we might not have this in hand, but always felt confident just because it seems like when we're down in LA, this team just plays different.
This team does. All the guys who are from LA, they all show up. They're all at peak performance. And I think that's going to be something this Oregon team needs. I know we're about to get into our breakdown, but man, for the local guys to really step up, that would be huge on Saturday.
Yeah. And it's, I love the Rose Bowl. Has its issues, but it's a great place to play a football game and to watch a football game. So really happy for all those guys. I know you really wanted to get down there for that game. I will be heading on to vacation almost as soon as that game wraps up and we get a little recording in for next week, but stay tuned. There'll be a lot in store for you guys. I think you're going to like, but about time to get to that part I hate the most, which is predictions. Sam, you lead us off because I'm still figuring it out.
You know, I told you before this is going to be the least confident I am probably with any prediction for the rest of the season. This game could go so many different ways. Part of me really wants to believe that Oregon is going to wake up for this game, a big road game nationally televised the way they did for that Ohio State game, and just come out locked in with a different kind of mindset. I think it's going to be a struggle, though. I think this game is going to be close. It's going to be tight. I do see Oregon coming away with a victory. Maybe it's just so I don't have to hear about how they lose wearing white, but either way, I think Oregon is going to be able to pull it off. It's going to be tight. There's going to be a little more scoring than we're used to. I think it will come down to some more fourth quarter heroics. My final score prediction, Oregon 34, UCLA 31 in what's going to turn into a classic.
Well, more important than my prediction itself, I'd like to point out I have a family member that says it's actually eggshell and not white. And that family member is an artist. So I just throwing that out there. But what's not as important is what uniforms we wear and what our record is in white or eggshell. It's a prediction. And man, I almost predicted against the Ducks this week until I heard a lot of guys in interviews and how they responded, especially to some of that negative crowd energy in Autzen. And I heard all the right responses, and I don't think anybody's dwelling on it. I just think everybody's moved on, and that's the most important thing. So I'm also going to go with a close one, but I think the mentality of this team, especially with some of the talent we have on defense, is going to be force the other team to make mistakes, hold on to the football, and wear teams out physically. And I believe we can do that to Coach Kelly. And unfortunately, I love Coach Azanero, but I think we can run on this defense all day if we're consistent, protect the football, and protect our runners and quarterbacks. So I'm going to go with Oregon 28, UCLA 21. I believe that's going to be the final score. And Oregon, I don't think, is going to have a comeback this game. I have just the feeling that we're going to secure this nice and early, have a lot of game day momentum. And if anything, get a little nervous at the end as Coach Kelly starts playing catch up in the second half and moving the football on long drives that take up a little bit of time off the clock.
Well, folks, he already gave you a pretty good description there. But if you're interested in a more in-depth breakdown from Nick or just a little pregame video from either one of us, I'm not even sure who's going to be responsible for filming that this week, you can definitely become a Once a Duck VIP. Subscribe, send us your money, and you get our content. Really does work just that simple. Just as low as $5, and we'll be able to get you in there before I'm able to convince Nick that it needs to be a monthly fee.
Well, hey, and until then, you can always catch us for free on all your regular podcast networks, you know, and we really prefer you catch our pretty faces on the YouTube version, especially, you know, when Sam's background is fading in and out during interviews. That stuff you just don't catch with the audio versions on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, any of those, you just don't get that. But hey, if you just like our voices and you can't stand looking at us, I understand that too. But
I don't blame you.
Alas, that's our pre-UCLA episode, and we'll have a whole lot more to talk about after that game. But for now, once a duck, always a duck.